Save big money on everything at Menards. Take control of your outdoor space with Roundup, Weed, and Grass Killer. The Pump and Go container is ready and easy to use. With the Pump and Go sprayer, you don't need to mix your own liquid, and you get up to 10 minutes of continuous spray. Save big on Roundup, Weed, and Grass Killer. Plus, check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Razor sharp commentaries Don't delivered with a purpose. Me. You found the killer bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Let's go back out to the HRP listener line. Thomas is in the Hive. Thomas, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's up, Thomas?
Hi, what's up, guys? So, basically what I'm saying is, first of all, Sean Payton, one of the greatest offensive mind coaches. I don't think anybody's going to disagree with that. D'Amico Ryan's already, boom, I think he's out because he's a defensive-minded guy. Second, I don't see D'Amico Ryan coming back to the Texans organization in the first place. He's already said it. I just don't see anything like that happening. As far as Ben Johnson goes, Ben Johnson's almost guaranteed he's going to Carolina. At that point, I think your best option is Sean Payton. And then we're not even so sure that Nick Caserio is going to make a good decision at 12. So I don't know what this whole hype is about, for preconceived notions about what this pick number 12 could be. He already, in my opinion, botched the third pick in the draft last year whenever he took Stingley over Sauce. And I think that's proven out through the whole year. Not only can Stingley not stay on the field, you know, but Sauce is, you know, top-tier talent at the secondary position. I think you give away that 12th pick with ease, throw another third in there afterwards. You've turned it into a really good coach who's already proven to go to somewhere like New Orleans back in 2005 with all these things against him, with Katrina, with everything else, and then go out there and prove that he's done nothing but create a powerhouse and a whole new identity. And I'll just hang up and listen.
Appreciate the call, Thomas from Katy. Because a lot of people are texting in right now, too, like, name one player at 12 that would bring more to the organization than Sean Payton would. Well, J.J. Watt went 11th.
Yep.
We looked at the last five number 12 picks in the NFL draft. I forget all of
Rashawn
them.
Rashawn Gary
was one of them. Micah Parsons was the number 12 pick 2 years ago. One of them was Ruggs from the Raiders. I forget who it was this past year who was the 12th pick of the draft. But, like, if you go look at just the last 5 years and you're saying I have the chance of getting one of these guys, like, who brings more to an organization, Micah Parsons or Sean Payton?
Look,
to me, it's Micah Parsons.
And I think, like,
Blakers, real quick, like, mm-hmm. It's not only a Micah Parsons versus Sean Payton conversation. Look, you can't guarantee Micah Parsons. I understand that. But it's not only a Sean Payton versus the number 12 pick, because that's not fair.
Right,
because,
right.
Like, if you're saying it's the number 12 pick, that means you're just not hiring a head coach, because it's Payton versus the 12th pick and who you'd hire as the head coach. So is Sean Payton's value, is Sean Payton's genius, is Sean Payton's brilliance worth the 12th pick versus Mike Kafka? Like, would you rather have Mike Kafka in the 12th pick or Sean Payton? Would you rather have D'Amico Ryans in the 12th pick or Sean Payton? Because I'd rather have Kafka and Ryans in the 12th pick than Payton. Now, if you're telling me that it's Sean Payton versus Jonathan Gannon in Cleveland's first rounder next year, that's where you have my attention.
This is where I would say, too, it's not just even to that. And look, everything you said is right. But from the level of saying, it's one thing to say you're bringing in Sean Payton. Even Sean Payton would tell you that he probably doesn't want you, if he takes this job, to give up number 2 and number 12 because of the fact that he could use those picks. Sean Payton, if he gets 2 and 12 and gets a quarterback and a wide receiver, is already looking better because of the fact that he has better talent to play with and work with. Now, if you tell me that you could take a Ben Johnson, who basically took guys that were overlooked or had been written off in Detroit, and made them one of the top offenses in football, and showed the innovation with the play calling to make everybody have to pay extra attention on the defensive side of the football every time the ball was snapped, you look at it and say, now give him a real quarterback coming out of college and one of the best receivers, if not the best receiver in all of college football coming out, and tell me how he couldn't just have a field day and have the potential to have even more success, especially in the long term, because you don't have to give up that pick. Because that pick, no matter who it is, but especially if it's another offensive player that can enhance the offensive player, you're probably going to take it too, and an offensive-minded head coach, and he's already done what he's done with less than talent. It just makes so much sense because you have so many holes to fill and your roster's so depleted. Instead of giving up a true quality football player just to get a coach when all the other coaches cost you nothing.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's not Peyton versus 12. It's Peyton versus 12 and the quarterback. Or it could be Peyton versus Cleveland's first rounder in 24 and the coach. I said quarterback and the coach. Some people are texting in that Lovie Smith went to a Super Bowl as well. I don't really think that that's that outrageous of a take because Sean Payton does hang his hat on the fact that he won a Super Bowl in 2009. We looked at this the other day. Some coaches that have won a Super Bowl more recently than Sean Payton, like Tom Coughlin's on this list. A couple of retired coaches are on this list. But if you look at Lovie Smith whenever he made the Super Bowl, it wasn't that much like further back than Sean Payton. Sean Payton won the Super Bowl in 2009. Lovie Smith lost the Super Bowl in the 2006 season. So like Lovie Smith was not that further, like that much like further back removed from appearing in a Super Bowl than Sean Payton winning a Super Bowl. I think that we sometimes overrate that Super Bowl win in 2009. I'm not saying that Sean Payton's a poor coach. I think what he did with a Hall of Fame quarterback, very good. More impressively, I think Sean Payton, like how he played with Bridgewater and how Jameis Winston looked with the Saints, I would actually put more stock on that than anything he did with Drew Brees, because now it's like, okay, this guy's winning pretty well with a quarterback who many people don't have success with, whether it was Bridgewater, whether it was Jameis Winston.
Yeah, no, you're right. Look, but I never want to diminish Sean Payton, because as an offensive mind, I'm not going to go as far as the caller, because I think that even sitting out for 2 years, you see a younger, even a more attention to detail type, innovative offensive mind that's running the NFL these days. Not that he isn't in an innovative offensive mind in football. But when you think about it and say, yeah, the Super Bowl, okay. But the other thing is they got rooked out of another appearance in a Super Bowl. They had good runs where they went deep into the playoffs multiple years. But overall, you're basically getting a guy because of a resume. You're not getting the guy because you know that in the last couple of years he's been on fire and he's taken, you know, especially in situations where he's probably had a little less. If you have a guy that's taken a little less and gotten a little more, that's exactly because that's what you need out of the Texans roster. It's not like I'm trying to take, if he took over the Rams, or we already talked about the Chargers, but in either situation, if he just stepped in and kind of like John Gruden did, and Tony Dungy set the table, built the groceries, did everything he had to do, then when Tony Dungy was let go and Gruden stepped in, they were Super Bowl ready and he just took them to the next level. I think that's the best situation for Sean Payton, where he is in his career and where the what kind of team he should be looking for. Because when he comes in and takes over a situation like this, he's not going to command the locker room the way he would with veterans. He's not going to be able to do a lot of the things that he used to be able to do because of the fact that the roster is not even close to what he had to work with when he was in New Orleans when they were winning a lot. And that's why I said, look, big name, sexy name, marketable name, everybody's top of the list in the coaching rumor mill, but he's not the right guy for this job. And then when you throw in as a starter, you got to give up draft capital to get him. That's what turns me off completely and says, look, good luck, Sean Payton. And I hope you get in a situation where the moon and the stars line up the way you want it to, but it's not going to line up here.
5619, Sean Payton gives some validity to an organization that has been inept for years. However, giving up this year's first-round pick for him is not a feasible solution to continue the growth of the Texans. I'm with you. That's why if I'm like trying to draw up a plan to get Sean Payton, I know that my parameters, I have to give you a mid to late first-round draft pick. I'm seeing if the Saints would be willing to take that Cleveland 2024 first-round pick, but I'm still not doing that if I can get my hands on Ben Johnson, D'Amico Ryan, Shane Steichen, Mike Kafka. Now, if you tell me that I have to do it or I'm getting Jonathan Gannon, then I'm doing it. Like, I'm trading the Cleveland's 24 first-rounder for Sean Payton before Jonathan Gannon's the head coach of the Houston Texans, from my point of view. I want nothing to do with Jonathan Gannon. I want nothing to do with Thomas Brown. I want nothing to do with the Jiro Avero. If I get one of those other four, I'm cool with it. Like, would you – like, I'll hold your feet to the fire on that. Mm-hmm. Would you rather have Jonathan Gannon or would you rather have Sean Payton at the cost of Cleveland's first-round pick?
Which first-round pick? This year?
2024, not 12. Okay. 2024.
I would take Sean Payton and give up the 24 next year because of the fact that he's an offensive-minded coach and he's worked with a lot of, you know, quarterbacks to where he would command the room and he probably, with the right offensive coordinator, could really do a lot of good for your new quarterback. I think that, to me, Gannon, and like you said, when you talk to true Philly fans and they wouldn't miss a beat and wouldn't mind if he left, mm-hmm. No matter how much that he's interviewed here in the past and made an impression, I don't think he's the right guy for the job because of the fact that, if just for starters, he's a defensive-minded coach. I don't know who he'd bring in as an offensive coordinator. I'm not sure he'd be the guy. And here's the other thing, Jeremy.
Talk about Gannon. People are saying Frank Reich.
Gannon. Yeah.
Which, and I'm not the idea of Frank Reich.
I hate that, too.
I don't like it.
I think the game's starting to pass Frank Reich by, and I think they got desperate with what they did in Indy. It cost him his job. And I don't think that right now he would be the right guy either. The only thing that I can say where Sean Payton would make sense for this franchise and it would be worth giving up the asset is because they're thinking, like we said, we're trying to resurrect their image. They know they've crapped the bed for the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. Well, that makes you less inclined to take a gamble, even if you don't feel it's a gamble. But if you take one of these young OCs and maybe it turns out to be a Nathaniel Hackett and they're not ready for primetime, you can't afford that. So the only reason why I think that it could be a real passionate discussion with the Texans inside the four walls of Cal's office or wherever they're meeting is, look, we've crapped the bed 2 years in a row. We need to keep this credibility, not just that he's interested in us and we're talking. We need to make sure we get a guy that is a guy with as many guarantees as possible instead of taking another flyer.
Yeah, I mean, it brings that. It brings the, you know, stability. It brings the seriousness, but I don't know if it's the best move, right? 713-780-3776. Back out to the HRMP listener line. Lamont, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's up, Lamont?
Hey, man. All time I want to say is, and I know this is small milking, the music cycle I'm dealing with. This makes Lovey's winning. This makes Lovey's, and I'm not even a Sean Payton guy. I really don't want the guy. But him winning that game, because that 30-second pick would have technically been a first round pick. It makes that winning that game even that much more critical, because now we're talking about the 12th round pick versus the first round pick in the second round. I'm all over the place right now, man. I just don't want to do it, but to break my own argument, because I'm always trying to break my own argument. All I got to say about Sean Payton, experience is more than experience is greater than theory. He's done it. He went to a crap team and rose that team. You guys remember the New Orleans Saints and stuff. That's about the only thing I can give him, that he rose that team from the bottom to the grave. People being Saints, but he quit on his team. Just like Deshaun Watson, I don't feel it at all.
Yeah, I appreciate the call, Lamont. That's something that I, like, to me, that's not getting talked about. Like, that's something that was a concern that we raised the other day. Blankers Lamont the other day raised the concern of what Sean Payton did to the salary cap in New Orleans, too, where he was making a lot of win-now moves that weren't in the best long-term interest of the organization, where the Texans aren't in that same, you know, window that the Saints were in when he was making those moves, so maybe there's an excuse there. I don't feel like we're talking about Sean Payton leaving New Orleans as much as we should. He was in the middle of a contract. The Saints weren't going to be as good a team, and he flat-out left. And he's wanting to enter the NFL a year later. The dude flat out left in the middle of a contract and bolted on his team. And a lot of the Sean Payton, like, you know, supporters and people that want Sean Payton, like, oh, well, he just needed a break away from football. Okay, best case scenario, he needed a break from football. Worst case scenario, he quit on the team. But even best case scenario, what is there to say he's not going to do that in 4 years with the head coach of the Texans? What's to say he's not going to need a break in 5 years, right? Like, he's going to be older. You probably think he's going to need a break more than he needed it this past season. So best case scenario, break, could do it again. Worst case scenario, quit on his team. Like, why is everybody glossing over the fact that he left in the middle of a contract for a team that was okay? Like,
yeah,
they were okay.
You have been all over this, to your credit. And I think that, especially from a Houston perspective, if you look at what James Harden did and enjoyed the sunshine and rainbows until he knew it didn't look like the grass was going to be greener the next season, and then he wanted out as quick as possible. Pretty similar to what Sean Payton did. I had Drew Brees. I had a team that was ready to win because of Drew Brees and all the veterans I had. And the minute Drew basically called it a career, I was stuck with Jameis Winston, and I tried. But I looked at it, and I looked at the landscape and said, it ain't getting any better anytime soon, and we keep throwing draft picks away, trying to salvage what we can and stay relevant. And he bowed out. He quit. He quit before he stuck it out and rode the. He didn't want to ride the tough times the way he rode out the good times. And I think that there should be some attention paid to that, because he's also a veteran coach, been there, done that enough to realize he's got enough money in the bank. If at a certain point he doesn't like the direction this is going and it's not going the way he thought it would go, who's to say he won't do it again?
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Where do you want to see Tom Brady next year? Where do you want to see him play? What are some realistic options? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. If it's the end of Tom Brady's career, well, I'd like to invite him to have a drink with me. Gentle Ben. Well, he's a vodka guy. I don't know. He might be a gin guy. I don't know. He might be a bourbon guy. I don't know. He can have his pick of the litter, but he needs to have a drink of Gentle Ben with Branham. Gentle Ben, a line of ultra-premium Texas spirits that use their state-of-the-art, innovative Prosecco craft technology that gives them the edge over everybody else on the market in purity, aroma, and in taste. Purification, Gentle Ben is unrivaled. You'll love what's not in it. Try a sip of Gentle Ben, compare it to your brand, and you're never going back. It is smooth, it is clean, it eliminates the burn. Enjoy your drink. Don't work through your drink. You can find Gentle Ben vodka and gin. You can now find the bourbon as well at Total Wine and Specs. Also online at gentlebin.com. Also, make sure you're looking at the end caps at Total Wine. Special promotion at Total Wine. Gentle Ben end cap promotion. You can find the bourbon, the double cast strength bourbon. It is fantastic, and it's great, too. It's prestigious, that bourbon is. Double platinum winner in the Ascot Awards, so you got to get your hands on it and try it. If you're headed to a Rockets game, you can try it there as well. You can find Gentle Ben at every bar inside the Toyota Center. Also, head to the Gentle Ben Bar, Section 125, and try their signature drink, the Big Shot Bob. Also, Meet the Maker events coming up. Your chance to meet Ricky Ford, owner of Gentle Ben Spirits. He's going to be at the Meet the Maker events at Total Wine coming up on the 20th in Cinco Ranch. Can't make it then. They'll be at the West U location on January 25th and then in Memorial on January 27th. Sit back with good company and raise a glass to the very best, Gentle Ben.
Warning, warning. You're listening to ESPN 97.5. All teams covered, no talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
5856 says maybe he, because we're getting some Sean Payton excuses now, maybe he, Payton, felt like the Saints did not have his back when he got suspended. Bounty gate for Sean Payton to be suspended for the entire 2012 season. The Saints stuck with him for another decade.
Yeah, they did.
How is he didn't feel that the Saints were loyal to him? That is outrageous. That was a decade ago.
If he felt slighted in the least, he didn't have to come back. He could have just said, look, I need an organization that has my back and believes in me enough to realize that, you know, you didn't treat me right. And then you bow out. But because he came back and flourished and was there for such a long time, man, I don't think that there was any bad blood between those two sides. And they made it work for an extended period of time that most coaches would kill for in terms of having that kind of longevity. But it ran its course, and he ran out before he could run to the finish line and see how it all was going to, the final chapters were going to be written. And he knew with Jameis Winston and whoever else, the retreads and the never will be's that they were trying to plug in there, that it wasn't even going to be close to what he had with Drew Brees, and he couldn't run the same kind of plays because of it too. And so he just basically threw the white flag in, and that's something that as a coach you never want to see if you're the organization.
Yeah, I mean, again, best case scenario, he took a break. Like, if you don't think that I'm right, that he quit on the organization, well, then, okay, you can push back at that. That's fine. We don't really know. And you say, well, he took a break. Okay, well, he might take a break again, like if he gets unhappy. And you know the irony of it, too, Blinkers? The Saints with Sean Payton could have won the NFC South this year.
Sure, they
lost
could've.
The division by a game. I think Sean Payton's at least a game better than
Dennis
Allen. I
agree with that. But here's the other thing, Jeremy. If he needed a break, wasn't the break because of Bountygate enough for him to recharge the batteries? He sat out for
a decade ago. It was a decade ago.
It was, but I'm just saying, when you need a break and you have the organization backing you as much as they back you, you don't think that they would make concessions and do some things, at least in the short term, so that you could take the load off a little bit because you mean enough to them and you guys have been together for an extended period of time that you're going to make it work. But the fact that you were just ready to pull the plug and say, I'm just stepping away, and really leave the organization hanging. I mean, I think from the Saints' perspective, the only silver lining is when you did and if you did decide to get back into coaching, you could get something for him because he was still under contract. But other than that, I think that that was enough for Mickey Loomis and the Saints to say it ran its course. We don't want him back this time around, and this is just not the way we saw this thing ending.
Jason in Champions brings up an interesting question. I think it's a fair question, too. He says, would you rather have Sean Payton or not if you would be guaranteed 10 years of a perennial playoff and Super Bowl contender, win a Super Bowl, but he has to quit and leave the team for a year somewhere in there? You can't just take the bad and not the good from his resume. I think that's a fair point, Jason in Champions, and I appreciate the question.
You still would take that if you're the Texans, to bring the first Super Bowl to Houston, to have playoff success for multiple years.
Have to give me the Hall of Fame quarterback. Like that's the big elephant in the room. Okay, yeah, I would take that, but who's my Hall of Fame quarterback?
Well, but you're saying that it's going to happen. So that's up for them to figure out. In the hypothetical scenario, if that's the result, then I'm taking it. Because of the fact that my only thing was going to say, at some point in there when he has to take that year off, we all know that the greatest laid plans can come to a crashing halt if your best player, say that same player you're talking about, say that franchise quarterback tears an ACL, it's a bad example, but it's still an example. The year Brady tore up his knee, they won a ton of games, but they didn't go anywhere because of the fact that from time to time, you're going to have a step back because of injuries that were unforeseen, and you have to deal with them. So I could deal with a down year because just like an injury could happen, as long as I knew that there was going to be that much sustained success. But you can't, like, if you're really going to dig down like you're saying, but you can't be guaranteed that sustained success because there's too many unknown variables that you have to have answers for, starting with quarterback, starting with all the different other players that have to fortify this roster that they don't have, and you don't know where they're all coming from because you're not just going to go pick and choose in free agency and they're all going to be hits, not misses, and turn out for you.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. The Hive is dictating. We keep talking about Sean Payton. We'll get to the Brady stuff in a little bit. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Big C, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's up, Big C?
What's going on, y'all? How y'all doing?
What's up, Clarence?
I'm not gonna be that whole defensive about Sean Payton quitting on the team. I'm not going to say he quit. But that last season, the 2021 season, that first game when they beat the Packers.
Shut up.
That was a rough season for anyone. You gotta look at everything that the Saints went through. They went through like six kickers. It was Hurricane Ida. That's the reason why they had to relocate that Packers game. Jameis Winston got hurt in like the first week, and they had to go to Trevor Simeon, who shouldn't even touch a football field again. Then they had to go to Taysom Hill, the tight end slash whatever you want to call him at the time. It was just a rough season for him. And I'm not going to say he quit, but yeah, he probably did need a break after that. And even after all that, they still went 9-8. And the only reason they didn't make the playoffs because a couple of teams were better.
But Clarence, as our resident Saints expert, I mean, do you think, because like Jeremy brings up a good point, if he stuck with it, they could have made the playoffs this year because they could have won the division because of Sean Payton. But when you say, he needed a break because of that, he dictated also when he stepped away, he knew that there was no solution coming in the short term. There was no easy way out of this because they had sacrificed so much just to do what they did for the run that they went on that you can't replace the quarterback and get another Drew Brees. And you don't have the picks or the other means, and because you're so cap strapped, you can't even go out and take the best free agent quarterback and make it better. That's part of the reason why he took the time off when he didn't come back.
And you know what? That's a double-edged sword about Mickey Loomis. Yes, he's a wizard when he works with the cap, but at the same time, they were doing that for the stretch of runs that was supposed to be Super Bowl, winning a Super Bowl. Getting two runs, the Rams and Minnesota Miracle and things like that. But that's a double-edged sword. You're making all these moves, just like the Rams did when they won their Super Bowls, in order to try to stay at the top. But at the same time, you're not getting any better. And I don't know. It's just showing how long they could have sustained that. And now it's kind of coming back to haunt them. As far as cap and draft capital and other things.
Yeah, you mortgage the future, and we appreciate the call, Clarence.
Well, Big C, real quick. Like, how did you in New Orleans feel whenever he left? Whenever he, took a break, quit on his team, somewhere in that range?
I mean, me personally, I felt like he was tired, he was done, and maybe we kind of needed new blood because at the time, we just thought it was a retirement. Let's just say that.
Yeah.
We thought he was retiring. He was walking away.
Retiring is one thing. Like I would feel bitter right now. I would be upset that he left.
At the time we thought it was just a retirement. He was retiring. Drew Brees left. It was a rough year. You know what? Let's go ahead and retire. But now it kind of stings a little bit. But if we get something back for him, then all is well. You know, get a first round pick, get another pick. Who knows?
All right, Big Sean. We appreciate it. Appreciate the call. Thanks, Clarence. Sorry to cut you off there, but I think that you were about done. Houston Astros. Ken Rosenthal reporting yesterday that they are actively interviewing GM candidates. Jim Crane, usually when he tells you something's going to happen, it's going to happen. He says he's going to hire a general manager before the start of spring training. It seems like the Astros are trending in that way. We're a month away from pitchers and catchers reporting the names linked to the general manager job for the Astros. Two of the three. What's the point of hiring a general manager? One of them, pardon the pun, would be a home run. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, tell you about my good friend Doc Linville. I've been telling you about him for quite a while. Doc Linville is the best in the business at the NeoGraft procedure. I've been telling everybody about this because it works and it gets your hair back. And if you're a guy and you look in the mirror every day and you say, man, I don't have the coverage area I once had. My forehead's an 8 head. I got a baboon's butt rearing its head on the back of my dome. And I don't think that there's any solution other than shaving my head. And I know that all these creams and foams and sprays just mask the problem. They don't fix the problem. I don't think that I can find a way to do anything but just move on and accept the fact I'm never going to have hair again. You're wrong. Because the NeoGraft procedure and the way Doc Linville does it gets your hair back. Mine was a hairline issue, and he got my 8 head back to a 4 head. And he did it in such a way and explained the process to me in such a way that it made perfect sense for me to do this procedure. My wife and I talked about it. She said, why wouldn't you give it a shot? And I am as happy as I could be, just like Jake Asman and John Granato and all the people here at the station that have done it that keep talking about Doc Linville, because it works. He does all kinds of plastic surgeries and other operations. But the procedure that works that is the most popular is the NeoGraft. Right now, for ESPN listeners, you can check out and get all the information you need to know about the NeoGraft procedure. Costs you absolutely nothing. Normally, a consultation with Doc Linville and his staff is $150. For ESPN listeners, it's free. Just go to 975hair.com, schedule an appointment. It's free. Go ask all the questions. Find out everything from financing to the procedure itself, the recovery time, and when you're going to see the full results. The biggest thing that got me, I'll give you a little bit of a spoiler alert, 95%+ of the follicles moved are going to grow and stay and be with you for the rest of your life. That's what got me and won me over, because it's simple. He takes hair from where you have a ton of it, and genetically, you're never going to lose it on the sides and the back. He puts it where you need it most. It grows, it gets stronger and thicker and longer, and before you know it, you've got your old hairline again. It's fantastic. Check him out today. Tell him I sent you by. I believe in these people and the NeoGraft procedure. Doc Linville's the best in the business. It's 975hair.com.
Years of research and innovation.
Innovation Map is the new voice of innovation in Houston.
Pretty cool, huh, Morty?
Covering startups, tech, energy, health, social impact, and more. Visit innovationmap.com today.
Do it now! Do it! Do it! Do it now!
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ojiro Averro has completed an interview with the Texans an hour ago. I would trade a first-rounder for Sean Payton before I hire Averro. Reports are they're going to interview Thomas Brown today as well. Trade Cleveland's first-rounder next year before I hire Thomas Brown.
Agreed.
Where are you on that list? Because for me, I'm out on Gannon, out on Brown, out on Averro. I would use a 2024 Cleveland first on Payton. The four that I would keep that I'm not trading for Sean Payton would be Benny Johnson, D'Amico Ryan, Shane Steichen, and Mike Kafka. Is that list different for you?
It's pretty close. I don't have D'Amico that high, as high, because again, I've been adamant that I need an offensive mind as my guy, and I want two offensive minds working with my franchise quarterback at all times or as much as possible. And then I don't have to have the question marks of who they're going to hire as an offensive coordinator, and is this guy capable of doing what needs to be done? Because we saw what Robert Saleh wasn't able to do with Zach Wilson as a defensive-minded coach when he hired an OC. I need two
offensive. The pushback would be McDermott and Allen. That'd be the only pushback, quite frankly.
Pretty much the only one. And it took Allen a little bit, and maybe it wouldn't have taken as long But yet, obviously, Josh Allen had a ton of talent. But to me, I don't want to take any more chances. And I want as offensive-minded a head coach and offensive coordinator as I can get. Uh-huh. I want them to be as modern-day as possible. And I want them to give this kid every chance to succeed, no matter who it is, so that you don't run into a Baker Mayfield or a Sam Darnold or a Trevor Lawrence under Urban Meyer and all these guys that are either completely derailed or taken off their beaten path for at least a year in the case of Lawrence by bad coaching or coaching that just wasn't the right fit for the player. For so many reasons, the Texans need this hire to be the right one. But no more so than because if you're going to take this huge leap of faith with a quarterback, you're going to need those kind of offensive minds to not only be there for this kid, but be there for the next 3 to 5 years, because that's as important as anything else. So you're not changing playbooks and everything else.
Let me put your feet to the fire.
Yep.
Yes or no, that you would rather have them than Peyton, and then, of course, the compensations. That we're going to use the 24 Cleveland Brown first, because if it's a number 12, it's a deal breaker. I'd rather have Avero. Mm-hmm. I can't believe I said that. Ben Johnson.
I would rather have Ben Johnson than Sean Payton.
DeMeco Ryans.
I would rather have... I'm not as enamored with DeMeco Ryans.
So you rather go Peyton in Cleveland 24 than DeMeco?
Yep.
So that's where we differ, because you're Steichen.
I'm not very enamored with Steichen. Look, I think that because
so Steichen or Peyton in the 24.
I Peyton in the 24 better than Steichen because again, it's solid.
So you're more Peyton than I am.
I'm starting to be more Peyton because of the fact that unless they have more offensive minded coaches that they're going to interview. Look, in the case of Steichen,
Kafka.
Kafka's a guy that's intriguing because I think that...
So you're at two, it sounds like.
I think Kafka could move up for me because of the fact that if you come from Daboll and you, whether you say through osmosis or otherwise, you learn so much just from working under, like the Shanahan tree. You're going to learn so much just from working under a guy that's innovative, that does the kind of things that Daboll was able to do in Buffalo, and now look what he's done to transform the whole organization as a leader and learn some of that stuff with the Giants. I'm intrigued by that. I think Kafka could be an up-and-coming guy. But I think it's a little more risky. And that's the thing that I think the Texans are going to shy away from, too, because they can't afford to screw it up or take a flyer as much this time because their two flyers have failed miserably in the last 2 years. Yeah. So,
see, I was Peyton plan five. To me, I think that's your plan C.
Unless there's other offensive guys that are going to be thrown into the mix.
See, I don't think there's going to be. I think this is the list. I think the head coach comes from this list.
See, that scares me a little bit because then, like I said, look, I think in the case of Steichen, the thing I was going to tell you that really turns me off on him is he's not calling the plays. He's
calling
the plays per se, right? But everything going into what plays are going to be called and setting up the play sheet is done by your head coach. Sirianni's doing all the tough work during the week because he's an offensive-minded coach. And then, yes, I'm sure there's a conversation. It's kind of like Andy Reid with Bieniemy. I'm sure that there's like a groupthink that goes into the play calling. But to me, it's not the ownership and the responsibilities the way it would be if you are just simply calling the shots, running the plays, and it's your offense all week long. So there's some possibilities with the other guys, but that's why Ben Johnson was so high on my list because he had very little to work with in an organization that has just had a reputation for being horrible. And in 1 year's time was able to completely resurrect that entire offensive structure and the results and the yardage they gained and the things that they were able to do and the way they made defensive coordinators cringe. That's impressive to me, and that's something that, again, the risk is he did it for 1 year, and that's something with this reputation of this franchise could be risky. But I like him the best because if you give him some more weapons and you give him the ability to work over an extended, you say, look, it's just not going to be a one and done or a quick fix. You're going to have these guys for a while, and tell us what other guys you would like to have that could make your offense even better. And you go get them for him. I think the sky's the limit.
Yeah, it sounds like Peyton currently for you is plan C. For me, it's the fifth plan. So you're higher on Peyton than me.
I am, and I still don't want him because I hate the compensation. And I still think that there's still more. Again, I think... for all the reasons I've said about it, it's not the right fit for right now at the right time, but I would take him as an offensive-minded, been there, done that head coach over a lot of these D coordinators that are being considered.
The Texans aren't currently the only team that in Houston that's hiring. The Astros are looking for a general manager. Jim Crane said he wants a general manager in place by the time pitchers and catchers report. That date's February 17th. We're a month away. Today's January 17th. Ken Rosenthal yesterday in The Athletic says that the Astros are actively interviewing GM candidates, according to industry insiders. The three names that have been linked to the Astros, two of them they might as well not even hire general manager blankers. The other one would be a home run I'm in love with. We'll start with the bad first.
Okay.
Former Marlins president of baseball operations, Michael Hill, who has spent the last two seasons as Major League Baseball's senior vice president of on-field operations. That one's like, okay. That one to me is just kind of a bridge until you bring somebody in that's here. I don't hate that one, but they're like, you already have guys that can be the bridge. I don't see the sense of actually going out to get Michael Hill, former Marlins president of baseball operations, kind of an old school guy too. The other one that's in that list of you might as well not even hire a guy is former San Francisco Giants Bobby Evans, who also interviewed with the Astros before Crane's hiring of Click in January 2020. This is actually a Dusty Baker guy. Bobby Evans was never the GM of the Giants when Dusty Baker was there, but he was in the organization for like two decades and they worked together for a long time. Never GM for Dusty as a manager, but they were in the same organization for a very long time. Might as well not even hire a general manager, in my opinion. The third name on this list, I would be over the moon about. I think it'd be a home run hire and would be part of kind of carrying the Astros into that next generation. Atlanta Braves Vice President of Scouting, Dana Brown, who has overseen the drafting of the Braves for the last couple of years. He's credited for Michael Harris, Vaughn Grissom, and also Spencer Strider from the Blue Jays. He came over from the Blue Jays in January of 19. This is a dude, if you look at the Braves minor league system over the years, that's been instrumental in their minor league system, that you're looking at a guy who can come in here, win some drafts, find some gems, and carry the Astros into that new generation. The big thing with me when it comes to baseball and a general manager is they have to have a plan to sustain the success. The Astros are going to be very good for at least the next 3 years. I would say like the next seven with the foundation that they have. But what are we looking at for the next, 5 years from now on, 7 years from now on? I think the answer to solving that question is Dana Brown. If they hired Dana Brown from the Braves, who's been instrumental in all of their young players, I would be over the moon. If it's Michael Hill, if it's Bobby Evans, you might as well have Enes Cabell be your general manager.
Yeah, and you're basically saying, look, we're kind of in hold mode. We're going to do something for the case of the short term, and we're going to hope that Stearns is available at the end of the year and that David Stern becomes the guy that, whether you give him president of baseball title or some other title, he calls the shots and someone works for him. Because you're right. I mean, look, if you can get a guy with the history that the Braves have that can be credited with some, if not a majority of, when you take a Max Fried into consideration and Strider and some of the young pitchers they developed, and then you look at some of the other players that they've developed along the way, that's the kind of system that if you're going to hang your hat on that and you're going to say, hey, look, as a general manager, we need you to do other things too. But if you've got a Furkus that's going to be more of your capologist, that's going to be able to handle the numbers and do some of the analytics, and you can do by committee some of the things that you might not be as experienced in as player development and player assessment, then that's fine with me because I think that that's what this team needs. We know that they have enough holes already filled that they're just going to need to kind of infuse the young talent and keep creating the younger generation to come in and get their feet wet and be a contributing factor in the nucleus you've created and added to, then that's fine. And I think that's really intriguing to me. But if you take a guy that's been in the league office for a couple of years and now you're going to throw him into a general manager's job and say, this is the kind of guy that I couldn't do without, BS. Then I call it right away and say, this is just a plug and fill bridge that is not going to be your long-term guy. Dusty's not going to be here long term, so I don't need a Dusty guy for the long term. If Dusty likes this guy, well, then that's worthy of an interview. But I'm running the organization. I'm calling the shots. I know that I'm in it for the long term. I need a guy that's going to be analytical and structural and all the things that I just said that I'm not looking at a guy with that kind of a history with Dusty and saying, well, that puts you a leg up. You already got those kind of guys, like you said. So I'm with you on all of those.
Give me Dana Brown. Dana Brown, new GM for the Astros, and let him go draft his tail off. 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Cash it or trash it coming up at the top of the hour. Mike Tannenbaum, former Jets GM, ESPN insider, will join us at 2:30. But when we return, the Houston Rockets, 11 straight losses, and it's no longer a matter of if. It's now a matter of when. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
Your teams, our priority.
Join the conversation with the Killer Bees. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Houston Rockets lost basketball last night. They lost badly. Best basketball team in the city is your number one Houston Cougars.
Oh, yeah.
Gave up 140 points. 140 points to a below 100, a below 500 Lakers team. LeBron felt old. Jabari made him feel old. But Blankers, the biggest thing with me now, the Rockets have lost 11 straight. You know, people are watching individually to see what Green looks like individually, growth, development. Same thing with Jabari. Same thing with Şengün, who offensively looks fantastic. I don't think that they like him a whole lot defensively. Mm-hmm. But to me, Blankers, it's now a matter of it's not a question of if, it's a question of when. There's no way I see Steven Silas being the coach of this team next season. And the only question that remains with Silas is not when, it's if. Or it's a, rather, I said that wrong. It's no longer if, it's when. Mm-hmm. When the Rockets move on from him. I'm still willing to give him the rest of the season because I don't really care a whole lot about the Rockets' win-loss record here. You just have to make sure that these young players are continuing to develop. Now, it wouldn't shock me, though, if it does come in the middle of the year.
It would shock me because of the fact that, you know, you already have Adam Silver talking about the fact that they are going to be proactive in trying to search out and search and destroy tankering teams, trying to tank for Wembanyama and Scoot and trying to get to the top of the draft, and they're going to frown upon that. Well, you don't have to look at the Rockets and think that they're trying to tank because they're just crapping the bed on a nightly basis until the manure factory is just adding up. So I wouldn't do anything until the end of the year with Steven Silas. And from the time that he was hired and then Russell and Harden wanted out and everybody wanted a mass exodus, we knew he didn't sign up for this gig. But he's the wrong guy at the wrong time. The same way we said that you need the right coach and offensive coordinator for any quarterback that you take to develop him. Well, I mean, on a basketball team, you've taken all this time and all these draft picks to get all this young talent, and then you're getting a guy that's not developing him. And you're not seeing improvements defensively. You're not seeing anything offensively. You're seeing, in a lot of cases, but in specifics, in a guy like Jalen Green, you're seeing, in my mind, a guy that's taking a step back. Now he's airballing a lot of shots. Now his shot selection's getting worse. Now all he's doing is isolations. And whether you say he's a scorer or not a shooter, at a certain point, all of the greats and all the ones that he potentially was compared to he could be someday, like, you still have to be a consistent shooter, and you got to take the right shots. And I think that you're hurting his development because he's not around the right coaching staff, and they're not doing anything to make him better. It's crazy that the only guy that is getting better while the team gets worse is Şengün. And you're right, he doesn't play defense, but neither does the rest of the team. At least from an offensive perspective, you see a guy that continues to make strides and progress and do things to where you go, this is a guy that's going to have a long career here if we play our cards right. And the only thing that might be able to change that is if we completely just keep giving him and surrounding him incompetence that's going to basically turn him off from this franchise. There's too much talent that's being underdeveloped to where you can't even make a serious evaluation right now, even on a KPJ, and you just gave him a contract. You want to be able to develop Şengün on the defensive end so he can give you what you need from a starting center every night and feel good about more minutes for him because they're not giving him enough minutes. You're looking at all these different young guys and saying, well, we might have swung and missed on Garuba, but how do we know until we truly try and work with him and make him into whatever niche we feel is best for him? You go up and down the list and you say, it's just whether you've got it and you're not developing it, or you need it and you have no idea when it's coming, or an Eric Gordon that keeps lingering, taking too many shots and minutes away from guys you should be developing. That's all secondary. Steven Silas is not the guy for this gig, but he's the guy for the rest of the year because he's going to be the guy that basically unintentionally takes you to where you need to go to get one of those top two picks.
And it really doesn't matter, like, the rest of this season either.
Like, nope.
I think that the beginning of the Rockets putting their foot on the gas and starting the acceleration to trying to become a winning team, a playoff team, I think the timeline has always been next year because that's when your first-rounders are owned by OKC. Yeah, they have, like, top four protection, stuff like that. But this is the year where you have your last pick without any sort of, you know, owing it to another team.
Take it a step further, Jeremy. On top of what you said, you get John Wall's contract off the books. So now you can truly take it a step further.
You have the I mean, they're kind of in a situation kind of similar to the Texans, where you have a high draft pick, you have salary cap space, and you're probably going to be in the market for a new head coach as well. I think that the beginning of next season is whenever you start to see this organization like grow. And we're hearing right now the Texans, you know, you have to get this one right. I mean, you kind of want to get them all right, but the timing of this is going to be very important for the Rockets as well, because the stars could align here. I mean, the stars have the potential of aligning. Maybe you do win the lotto and you get Wimby, and all of a sudden you have a playoff nucleus, and then you bring in a coach who can change the culture and you know, lead to development of these young players and build a winning attitude. Because you're right, this team doesn't have a winning attitude right now. They don't play defense, not a whole lot of effort, not a whole lot of offensive game planning, things like that. Like, whoever you bring in has to be that guy. You have to combine it all. You have to hit in this draft, final year that you have your pick. You probably have to hit on a veteran or two with the salary cap space that you have to give them kind of a, you know, there's not a Chris Paul out there, but how Chris Paul brought it to the Phoenix Suns and all of a sudden a really bad losing team with a lot of talent became a winning team overnight thanks to a veteran.
Heck, OKC,
like that.
Jeremy, taking a step back from what you said. Before he even got to Phoenix, he made OKC look legit without not any talent hardly around him because
I mean,
he was so
they
good.
They were a playoff team.
Yeah.
They were a playoff team. Now, they didn't have the talent of Phoenix, but you're right. It was a veteran that taught that, you know, team and organization how to win. So the Rockets need one more uber-talented young player. Hopefully you get a top two pick, so it's either Wimby or it's Scoot. You need to probably bring in a veteran or two that can teach the young players how, you know, to win in the NBA, like a Chris Paul did. Now, you're not going to get as good of a player as Chris Paul, but that type of veteran. And then the third thing that you have to do if this organization's going to take that step forward, not saying they need to be a playoff team next year, but a step forward heading that direction, is they have to hit on a head coach that, one, demands defense, two, demands shot selection, and makes young players better, because he's going to have to make Jalen better, he's going to have to make Jabari better, he's going to have to make Şengün better, and he's going to have to make whoever you draft number one better.
Well, not only that, but he's going to have to command the room. He's going to have to command the respect instantaneously of a very young, new generation of talent that doesn't know who the Kevin McHales and the old school veterans are of the world, except for a name they may have heard a time or two. They need to see someone that's been there, done that, more in their window. So, you know, the name that I've always thrown out that you were on board with, too, is Quinn Snyder. Quinn Snyder played at Duke under Coach K. They all know who Coach K is. Quinn Snyder had a winning situation at Missouri when it was a tough situation to try and win at. Quinn Snyder had a good run with the Utah Jazz. Quinn Snyder is a more modern-day name that could come in here and have the guys in the room go, I can respect this dude. He's been there, done that. He's been a head coach before, which Silas hasn't been. And then when he starts getting into philosophies and getting up into their kitchen to say, hey, look, you can believe the hype all you want. We're not trying to get you on the cover of Slam Magazine. We're trying to get the cover of Sports Illustrated. We're trying to show that we're a team that you need to be reckoning with because of the fact of the way we play. And they're not playing anything near that type of basketball right now. And there's no signs they're going to be doing it under Silas anytime soon. The defense is awful. The way that they can't rotate, the way they can't switch, or they won't switch. And then offensively, it's all about getting theirs. They're not trying to pass the ball and cut without the ball and ball movement, body movement type offense. It is all isolation, and it's all standing around for the other four guys. It's tough to watch. It's tough to digest. And if you're Rafael Stone, as much as you've had picks fall into your lap and you haven't had to feel that scrutiny of like a Sauce versus Stingley type pick, because you always were left taking what was left after other teams made the tough call, Cade Cunningham over Green, and then Orlando taking Paolo, and then Chet going to number two to OKC, and you taking Jabari because he was what was left. You're not going to get scrutinized for that. But if you're hanging your hat on the fact that you found Jayshon Tate, good for you, Rafael Stone. You made the trade for Şengün. Good for you, Rafael Stone. But now, be the general manager that says, I know I don't have the right coach for this job. I got to make a tough call. I know he's a good dude. I like him a lot as a person. But I got to make the right move for my franchise right now because I need to take these young kids and develop them to the next level. I need to be savvy, like you said, to find a veteran or two that's probably won already so that they're not looking to chase a ring. They want to chase an opportunity to still play but be meaningful in the locker room, the practice court, and on the floor with whoever they play for. Be a coach on the floor if you can find it. These are the kind of things. And then from that standpoint, take it to the next level. Get rid of Eric Gordon and get whatever you can, knowing addition by subtraction. He's hurting the development of your players indirectly. And push it forward.
You can do that without trading him, though. Like, I'm okay with Stone having the demand. Like, Shams reported that the Rockets are asking for a good young player or a first-round pick for Eric Gordon. Mm-hmm. If you're going to draw your line in the sand that you're not giving Eric Gordon up for more than for less than a first-round pick, you're not going to do it for a second-round pick, okay, that's fine to have that line in the sand. But once the trade deadline comes and you don't trade Eric Gordon because you're probably not going to get that return, then you need to send Eric Gordon home. Yep. Like, quite honestly. Like, you need to go to John Wall.
And the track
record. We're going to pay you. We'll pay you, but we need to give minutes to the youngsters.
Well, you're right. The track record's already been there. If you've done it with John Wall for $40 million, mm-hmm. it doesn't matter what Eric Gordon still owed. You can do the same thing again. You won't feel nearly as bad. But he is a detriment every time he steps on the floor because he's taking shots away from the young players. He's taking minutes away from the young players. Look, I've said this to you over and over again. If you're going to take one of your first-round picks, it's one thing to say you took Garuba. He doesn't look like he's the guy that you thought he was going to be. But when you take a Josh Christopher and you take him in the first round and you see glimpses, but you know if he had coaching, maybe he wouldn't be shot first all the time, shot happy and a gunner. Maybe he could be the guy you wanted to be because when you told him to work on his shooting, he went to the G League and stayed late after games at the Rockets games to work on his shot till he became a better shooter. Now give him a chance to play on a nightly basis so you can see if it's working. Don't let him sit on the bench and dwindle away while the time is ticking. See what you have in every single one of these young players while you still can.
713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Cash it or trash it, what are our overreactions, the hot takes from the other weekend that we're trying to sell to the other two of us? It's next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.